to effect when the Supreme Court overturned Roe v. Wade. Harris said he has the Biden administration's full support.
Our friend here has to use his resources to fight a ban that was passed in 1849, before women even had a right to vote.
Harris also met with local Latino leaders who spoke about the importance of protecting immigrant rights. She also visited a classroom at UW-Milwaukee and spoke to political science students about climate change. Evan Casey, Wisconsin Public Radio.
Sports: Colton Wong hit a career-high 3 homers and drove in 5 runs, helping Brandon Woodruff and the Milwaukee Brewers beat the lowly Reds 5-1. The series continues this evening in Cincinnati. Elsewhere, the Cubs beat Pittsburgh 3-2. The White Sox lost to the Indians 4-2. Now the WGTD forecast from the National Weather Service. Cloudy skies today, a high around 64. Mostly cloudy tonight, a low of 51. For tomorrow, a slight chance of showers in the morning. Otherwise, it'll be a mostly cloudy Saturday with a high around 69. For Sunday, partly sunny skies. Not much change in temperature, a high around 68. It will be breezy with a northwest wind gusting as high as 30. Right now, mostly cloudy skies, a temperature reading of 49. I'm David Cole, WGTD News. The morning show with Greg Berg is coming up. And we welcome you to the Friday morning show on WGTD. I'm Gregory Berg. I'm so pleased and honored to be sitting opposite 3 colleagues of mine from the music faculty at Carthage College. 2 of them grizzled veterans from the morning show, having come on the program many times over the years. Dr. James Ripley, who is Director of Instrumental Activities at Carthage, Dr. Peter Dene, who is Coordinator of Music Education and conductor of both the Carthage Chorale and the Treble Chorale. And for her first visit to the morning show, the first of many, I hope, Dr. Margaret Burke. We're calling her Dr. Maggie Burke at her insistence, who is the new Director of Choral Activities at Carthage College. And more to the point for our conversation today, conductor of the Carthage Choir. And all 3 of these people will be very busy this weekend because it's Carthage Homecoming. Carthage Homecoming 2022, as the school celebrates its 175th anniversary. And we're here today to talk about what promises to be a glittering homecoming concert tomorrow evening in Siebert Chapel at 7:30 p.m., a concert which will also feature, among other things, a visit of a number of alums singing on the concert. And most especially, we're very excited that a Carthage alum, Laura Kepler, of course, also Miss America from about a decade ago, is back at Carthage and will be singing with the Treble Chorale. So there's a lot to look forward to on Saturday night's concert, and we'll be talking more about it, and are especially excited to have the opportunity to introduce you to Dr. Burke and to find out more about her interesting life and background. A warm welcome to all 3 of you to the morning show.
Good morning.
Thanks,
good morning.
Greg.
Good to have all of you here. So, let's talk to our veterans first just about kind of the complication and challenge and delight of putting together the homecoming concert any year, but particularly this year when it comes so blooming close to the start of the school year.
Right.
I know that the students have been, you know, transitioning with lots of activities as they come in, and certainly working towards a program this early has its special complications, but the students really have done so well in preparing the music and are excited to perform in this program. Sometimes the band has done a combined pops concert out on the patio to start the season, but because homecoming is so soon this year, we couldn't even fit that in. But yeah, we're looking at seven rehearsals is how many we'll have to put this together. So it's quick.
Wow.
Yeah. And for the choirs, I think I've been here since 2005, and I think I'm pretty sure this is the earliest we've ever had to be ready to go with some really great music. And so like Jim said, the students have stayed on board and really worked hard knowing the importance of it all. And
right. I'm assuming the music faculty has little, if any, input on when homecoming is scheduled.
Driven by athletics, yeah.
As is the world.
Nobody asks us.
No. Right. And Dr. Burke, we'll get into your background and the search process and all of that, but just say a quick word about what it has felt like to have to really hit the ground running as the brand new director of the Carthage Choir with this big high-profile engagement so soon in your calendar.
You know, I think it's actually kind of helpful because there's so much work to be done. There's not time to, you know, worry too much about it and question decisions. It's like, all right, we have a concert in, you know, 2.5 weeks. Here we go. And the kids have been just awesome. I shouldn't call them kids. They are fully adults. But they are. They have absolutely been super welcoming and quite grace-filled in their welcome. So I've been really excited. I'm really excited to share this concert tomorrow.
Very good. Dr. Dene, I wanted to just circle back and make sure we really properly acknowledge the presence of Laura Kepler on the program. And we had hoped that she might even be part of this conversation today via the telephone, but she's traveling.
She's on her way. She lives in California, and she's flying here with her two children today. So about a year ago, I knew that the 40th anniversary was coming up, and I just called her and said, would you ever be interested in singing with us? And she didn't hesitate and was very excited to do it. And we kind of stayed in touch over the year. And it took me a while to find the pieces. There's not a lot of music for treble choir with an extended soprano solo. Mm-hmm. But I found two great pieces. They happen to be by the same composer. One is an arrangement of a Dolly Parton song called Light of the Clear Blue Morning. And the second is a piece, the composer is Craig Hella Johnson, and he wrote it's kind of like a cantata called Considering Matthew Shepard.
Oh, right.
This is a movement from that called Meet Me Here, which really seems to suit the homecoming theme pretty well.
Fantastic. Looking forward to that. Dr. Ripley, tell us a little bit about what the Wind Orchestra is going to be playing Saturday night.
Well, we've got three really exciting works to play, but all of a different kind of nature. We're actually opening the concert with a brand new work. This is actually a commission premiere, as it's called. It's not the world premiere because we're not doing all five movements. Mm-hmm. We're only taking the three movements of this new piece called Wessex Dances by Martin Ellerby. We've done a lot of Martin's music over the years, and this was something that he had written for a consortium of groups. And it's everything from St. George Slaying the Dragon, which is just the opening thing and very exciting and energetic, to a reflection on summer. There's a summer solstice, as we just passed that season. And then it finishes with a blacksmith depiction of things, which is really just a really cool piece. The second work is in our Black Composers Matter initiative. Julian Work did a piece a number of years ago in the 50s for the Eastman Wind Ensemble, and it's called Autumn Walk. So we have a little bit of transition into autumn as well. But it's actually an impressionistic piece. It's very much like in the mode of Debussy and Ravel and Charles Tomlinson Griffiths. And there's just not many band pieces in impressionistic style. And Work wrote this in the 50s, and it's an extraordinary piece and actually has some additional material in it that was later extracted. And so I think this has only been done now the second time in this version that we'll be doing it. And then we close with a wonderful little piece called Merry Music by Hungarian composer Frigyes Hidas. And it's not a march, but it feels kind of in that vein. But it has also these little tilts towards Impressionism and Romanticism as well as Hungarian folk music. So just a wonderful program to share to get the year off to a start.
Right, and to launch this this great concert. Dr. Burke, tell our listeners what the Carthage Choir is going to be singing Saturday night.
So there will be two pieces with just this year's Carthage Choir. They are the first of those is a sort of satirical work by a Finnish composer, Jaakko Mantajärvi, who actually started out as a translator and now is one of Finland's most active choral composers. This piece is called Pseudo-Joik, and a joik is a genre of music from the Sami culture in northern Finland. And a joik is a piece that is characterized by short segments of music that are very repetitive, but that get increasingly more rhythmically complex as it moves along. And he wanted to take this idea of a joik, but turn it into sort of an impression of a stereotype. So essentially, the choir sings in gibberish syllables. They are not Finnish, and they have these kind of short patterns that do repeat, and it does get sort of rhythmically more complex as the piece goes along. You'll notice some definite nods to the satirical kind of humorous nature of the piece as well from the choir. They've worked really hard to really deliver a total performance, I would say, on this. So I can't wait for that. Then they'll sing an arrangement of a concert spiritual by Harry T. Burley, who is one of America's foremost and earliest arrangers of concert spirituals, My Lord, What a Mornin', which is, of course, beautiful. It's actually a later spiritual. Most scholars tend to think it came from the north rather than the south. But of referencing sort of, you know, when the stars begin to fall, kind of a revelations, kind of a message, and about hope and about what could tomorrow bring. And they've really committed to singing for justice in that piece, and I really, 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 really am proud of them on that.
Wonderful.
Then the alumni choir is going to come back and join us for three pieces. We're going to sing Alice Parker's Hark, I Hear the Harps Eternal, which is a Carthage Choir favorite from years past,
that's
as
right.
My colleague Peter nods next to me. He sang it when he was in Carthage Choir. Alice Parker turns 97 this year, so she is definitely one of the grand dames of American choral music. And then a short piece by Amy Beach, who is an American composer in the latter part of the 19th and early part of the 20th centuries. It's a short motet called Peace I Leave With You, which it's short, but it is a perfect miniature, I think, in terms of part writing, in terms of pacing, in terms of emotional expression. And I always love to amplify voices of composers who have sometimes been passed over because of their gender. So.
Wonderful. And then everything comes together in a grand finale for the concert.
Yep, and then Maggie's doing that too. I guess you want to tell them about
it? Oh, sure. Well, so I really wanted to have the final part of this concert be a very collective experience, and so we're going to sing the Martin Shaw With a Voice of Singing, which is a British piece from back in the mid 20th century. It's one of the great church choir pieces, I think, in most libraries across the country.
And we sang that in Carthage Choir when I was there too.
There you go. Yeah. Fun fact about Martin Shaw: his nephew Sebastian Shaw played Darth Vader in Return of the Jedi. So there's your fun fact for the day. So.
That is a fun fact, and it's a fun piece. So that'll be a great way to bring things to a close.
And Greg, could I add one more thing?
Yeah.
So the Treble Choir is doing they're opening their piece with a Slovenian by a Slovenian composer, and it's called Bog Dai Dobro Večer. And the reason I want to mention it, it's a great piece, but also when I ordered it from the publisher in Slovenia, because you can't buy it here, and they told the composer that I bought it, and he emailed me, and he's going to be here with his choir, going to perform at Carthage on September 28th at noon. They wanted some place to perform on either Friday or Saturday of that week, and we couldn't do an evening concert, but we're going to have it be a midday concert on the 28th of September. So that's open to the public. It probably will be, I mean, they'll be performing, but we don't imagine there'll be a lot of people there other than some of our students. So and then the composer, he's also a conductor, obviously, and he's going to work with some of our students in the afternoon.
Oh, how fun. Yeah. So that's Wednesday, I think, right?
Yeah, I think it's a Friday, isn't it, September? Maybe I have the wrong day. Whatever the last Friday in September is.
Okay, I think.
30th.
Okay.
September 30th.
All right, Friday, September 30th. 12 noon, I assume, in Sieber Chapel.
Yes.
And that's a great tie-in. Yeah. I'm glad you mentioned it. Well, for those of you just joining us, we are talking on today's morning show with three members of the music faculty at Carthage College who all are playing a role in Saturday night's homecoming concert in Sieber Chapel, 7:30 Saturday night. So we have Dr. James Ripley, who is leading the wind orchestra Saturday night, Dr. Peter Denay, who is leading the treble chorale and some alums Saturday night, and we have Dr. Maggie Burke, who is the new coordinator of choral activities at Carthage and the new conductor of the Carthage Choir, leading them and some alums as well. And Dr. Denay, you should maybe mention also briefly how Sunday morning you'll be busy with Carthage Chorale.
Yeah, the chorale is singing for the worship service on Sunday morning, and we had a suggestion from someone in our institutional advancement that we consider inviting alumni to do that as well, and it was actually, we have quite a few people that said yes, we want to do that. So we're actually singing a piece that I arranged, and it's not too difficult. So it was something that I knew that they could do with just like maybe 15-20 minutes of rehearsal with the choir. So it's 10 o'clock. It's an hour service, and that's open to the public as well.
And are these alums?
Oh, and Jim's band is playing as well, right?
Right, wind orchestra will have a short selection to offer during the worship as well.
But very good.
Thank you.
Yeah.
And I assume your alums are from not just the Carthage Chorale, but also called the Chapel Choir before?
So we tried to reach out to as many people as we can. Evidently, there's a form that students fill out when they graduate, and that's how they keep track. So if they did that, then that's how we reached out to them, besides kind of social media stuff.
Very good. I'm a little bit impressed that you or somebody took note of the 40th anniversary of the treble chorale, which, of course, once upon a time was known as the women's ensemble, right. Somebody saw that coming.
Well, you know why? Because when I came as a freshman to Carthage, 1982, 40 years ago, that was the year that John Wind had the chapel choir, and it was a mixed ensemble, but there weren't enough men to make it a mixed ensemble. So he made the chapel choir a treble choir. And then so from 1982 till I think late 80s, early 90s, it was known as the chapel choir. And then Amy Haynes took over as the director and changed the name to the Carthage Women's Ensemble. And then when Michael Burkhart came in 2001, was it?
2001, right.
He continued with the Carthage Women's Ensemble, and then I took over when I got here in 2005, and just a few years ago we changed it to the treble choir. So that's the history, that prior to 82 there wasn't a treble choir on campus, and it was basically because there weren't enough men that that the ensemble was created, but then it continued after that.
Right. Well, with this wonderful life of its own, and I know that it has meant a great deal to you and the people who have sung in it, in terms of especially some of the repertoire that you've done and also some of the places you've gone.
Yeah. The unique thing is, for me, or maybe not unique, but before coming to Carthage, I actually had never conducted a treble choir. And so I didn't know a lot about the literature, and I didn't know, prior to the mid-90s, there wasn't a lot of stuff that was really written for treble choir. It was mostly children's choir music that you sang with your treble choir. And so that was part of my mission, was to kind of figure out what's really available that's kind of good literature for adults to sing, you know. And so part of it was we've commissioned a lot of new works, but we've also done a lot of great music that's out there. And, we've traveled to Central Europe in 2007 and China in 2015 and Tanzania in 2019, and we'll be going back to Central Europe this January. So, and then we've done some things regionally and around the country as well. But those, yeah, it's been a good. They've had some good experiences.
Absolutely, and so this is a great anniversary that you're celebrating in a big way. And again, with Carthage alum Laura Kepler as part of this great celebration. It's going to be great. So let's stick with you, Dr. Denae, for just a moment longer as we explore the life and career of Dr. Burke and her coming to Carthage College, because you were part of the search committee.
Yeah, I was the chair. I was chair of the search committee, yeah.
So just give our listeners just a little bit of a sense of kind of the scope of that responsibility. Yeah. I don't mean you specifically so much as the search committee, and kind of the challenge that was at hand.
Yeah, so Dr. Garcia Novelli, who was the previous director of Coral Activities, announced towards the end of the year in 2021 that he was moving to a new school, and so I was out of the country then. And then we did some kind of back and forth emails and some Zoom chats with our dean and some of the other faculty. What are we going to do, and how are we going to proceed? And we had a 1 year. Replacement with Dr. Biela, who was a former director at Lawrence University and another university in Texas, and then Dmitry Shapovalov took over for the second semester while we were kind of doing this search. And we had the typical way for any college position is you make a national announcement about the search and wait for applications to come in. And we had over 80 applications of really well-qualified people from all over the country and actually internationally, too. We had a few outside the country apply. And
wow.
You just kind of keep narrowing the search. You just, you know, you start with the big pile and then you narrow it to a smaller group and then you ask for more information and then you narrow it again and then you ask to talk to those people and then you and get, you know, videos to look at and then you narrow it again and it just kept Maggie kept rising to the top and we brought in three really, really excellent people. So typically for a college search, you're allowed to bring three people to campus to have a this was a 2-day interview, and we keep them very busy for two whole days of just teaching classes and meeting with administrators and faculty and students and conducting the choir and having meals together and once again, obviously, Maggie came to the top, and so it was a great experience. A good committee to work with, and everybody really was conscious of wanting to obviously do the right thing, that this is an important, not just for our music department, this position is important for the department, but also the college. Right. The long tradition of music at Carthage and the choir at Carthage. And what I said to all the candidates was that the choir is in a good place. Nothing needed to be repaired. So it was in the position to move whatever direction somebody took it. Mm. That's what's exciting, is there's nothing that has to be fixed, but there's lots of things that you can go, places you can go from where we are.
By the way, it would be probably interesting to our listeners to know that search committee, I'm pretty sure, did not consist entirely of music faculty members.
Right, and that's a policy across the campus that they want. We had one faculty member from psychology, and then we had an administrator. And it's not typical to have an administrator on the committee, but it was for this position. They felt it was a good idea, and all the people were very engaged in the whole process. So that was neat.
Yeah. Well, I'm excited to talk about your time when you came and auditioned and what that experience was like and ultimately the big announcement, which is a really fun moment. But I think it would be premature to dig into all that before giving our listeners a chance to find out more about you. So, Dr. Maggie Burke, let's get a capsule summary of where you come from. And I don't mean just geographically, but from whom you come and kind of the family in which you grew up and the way in which music's been such a major player in who you are for quite some time.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I am the child of a church organist and choir director, and then my mom was always a great amateur musician, and still is. I grew up, you know, being in church choirs, in school choirs, and I have an identical twin sister who is also a musician. She is the new canon for music at Trinity Episcopal Cathedral in Portland, Oregon. So I guess we both sort of took on the family business in that sense. Even though my dad was trying to tell us, you can be an orthodontist, you can always do music for fun, you can always, but of course, you know, at some point you realize that's a vocation and you can't just do it for fun, and my parents have always been very supportive. I did my undergraduate degree at St. Olaf College in Minnesota, where I sang in the St. Olaf Choir and had some incredible experiences with the liberal arts tradition specifically. And I wanted to go to a liberal arts school more than a conservatory because I wanted to, you know, find myself in a place where I was with students who thought big and asked the big questions and cared about kind of the, not just the performance of music, but the community around music. And not that you can't have that at a conservatory, but at a place like Carthage, at a place like Luther, at a place like St. Olaf, it's really inherent in the college's mission and vision for what the music program does. Then I taught public school music in Minnesota and Kansas. I'm originally from Kansas for I guess 4 years there in the middle. And I loved public school teaching, but I sort of always knew that I wanted to end up in academia. So I did my master's degree at Yale. Then I did my doctorate at University of Michigan. And then now I'm here, which is, you know, pretty wild to think about how and I'm very grateful for all the people who have, you know, believed in me on this journey and taught me how to trust my own vocation. So
tell us what your impressions were when you first took note of this position that was open at Carthage College. Had you heard very much about Carthage? Or, I mean, what did it feel like to even think about going after a position like that?
Yeah, so when you are a freshly minted doctoral student, people always ask, where do you want to end up? And you're like, wherever they hire me. literally, you're just throwing out applications to everything. Even if you don't really want the job, you have to sort of apply for it. And so I had applied for probably already 20 positions by that point. And that was, and Carthage posted fairly early on in the year. There was schools in California, schools in New Mexico, schools in Florida. And I was like, I don't want to live in Florida. Oh, no. I'm a good Midwesterner. I don't want to be in the swamp. No. Yeah. So here I am, you know, and I find this, I check the new listings every single day, press that refresh button. And lo and behold, there's this Carthage College that comes up. And I had never heard of Carthage College before. I was like, wow. I looked at the website and I was like, well, first of all, this place is gorgeous. Holy cow. And then I saw the mission of the campus. I saw the sort of vision of where they wanted to go. And I'm like, all right, I can totally see myself working at a place like this. I can get behind that. Absolutely. But of course it was it was the director of choral activities position. It was, you know, not one that I would necessarily think like, oh yeah, they're going to hire someone fresh out of their doctorate for this. But I was, of course, you always apply anyway, as my mentor Eugene Rogers said, always apply. You never know. And lo and behold, I get an email from a certain Peter Dene asking for more information, and I'm like, okay, all right. But I guess it was just one of those things. I feel pretty lucky in my life too. Whenever the right thing has come around, I've sort of felt this like buzz of resonance about it with the people and the place, and there's something about it that seems like a gut reaction is right, and lo and behold, it turned out to be exactly the right thing. So
tell us a little bit about what it was like to be selected as one of the three finalists. And actually, I mean, what I'm really more interested in is what it felt like to be brought to campus and to be plunked down in front of the Carthage Choir and to have to lead, in effect, a sample rehearsal with the search committee observing you.
Yeah. So I will say that Carthage was my very first interview, and it was, you know, the full 2 days, interviews with the president and everything else. And so I was I wasn't like nervous more than I guess you would be for any other big event. Obviously, you want to do well, and so you're trying to keep it all in balance. Honestly, the choir rehearsal for me was the part I was like, I know I can do this. Okay, great. And so I got in front of them, and they were so generous and excited and so willing to be to try all the things I was asking them to do. And I finished that rehearsal, and I was just like, yeah, that felt great. And these people seem amazing. And I mean, I obviously don't know who the other people were, and who they brought in. But at least for me anyway, yes, if they offer me this job, I will say yes, absolutely. So
Dr. Dene, as you've already said, after all of this process and looking at everything, the decision was made to offer the position to Dr. Burke. We should probably mention the fact that this was not just faculty that weighed in, but you also asked for the input of the members of the Carthage Choir themselves.
Yeah, and the faculty and the administrators who met with her, and then the students had a form that wasn't required, but that they could fill out for each of the candidates. And it was informative to us that I'd let them know that it wouldn't be a deciding factor for us, but it would be one of the factors that we considered when we made our decision. But yeah, so the students had a voice if they chose to use it.
And describe that dramatic day when Dr. Burke communicated to Carthage. I don't know if that was to you directly.
It wasn't to me. It was to our dean, Karine Ness. Yeah.
That she was going to accept the position that had been offered. And
yeah. So describe what happened. Well, what's funny is just yesterday, the president was having a pig roast outside of his house, and it was sponsored by one of our board members, Patrick Anderson, who I went to school with him, and so he kind of twisted my arm to go. So I was there, and then at some point the president came over to talk to me, John Swallow, and one of the first things he said is, "I still think about that day when we announced Maggie being hired." Because what happened is Karine called me and said, she said yes, and I said, well, it was right before Carthage Choir was going to begin that we found out
the rehearsal.
Thank you. They were going to begin the rehearsal, which is after 4 at most days, And so I said, well, we should tell them right now. So Karine came down, and I think she had texted the president or something, and he wrote back to her and said, "Wait for me." And so we were standing outside the choir waiting for President Swallow to come, and then we all went in and I made the announcement, and they just it was this huge shout.
Exploded. I could hear it in my office. Could you really?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. we heard it in the room. I'll tell you that.
And so then I really can't remember all the sequence of events, but I think I might have asked the president to say something, and then I leaned over to Karine. I said, "I wish we had taped that." And she said, "Well, we can have them say something and to Maggie." And so, did we call you?
You sent me a video.
Okay.
I was on my way back from, I had 3 interviews right in a row, and I was literally in the Kansas City airport. I was in the Southwest gate area, and I get this video from Peter, and of course, after a pretty stressful few weeks of what's going on, what am I gonna do, I get this video, and these kids, just the joy, and I have somehow caused this joy, this is amazing. And so they're just kind of happy weeping in the Kansas City airport, and some woman comes up to me, "Are you okay?" "Yes, I'm really, really great, actually."
What did they say? I don't even remember.
You talked.
Oh, I talked.
Yeah,
yes,
you did. And then you just said, because I was, you wished me luck on my dissertation defense, which was the next day.
Oh, that's right.
And okay. and then you said welcome, and then everybody clapped, and then I cried. Yeah. So it was fun. Yeah.
A lot of tears, all of them happy, fortunately.
I've been on lots of search committees. I've been in higher ed for 3 decades now, I think, or something. So, but this was a unique one, the ending part for sure. How excited the students were and are still, it seems. Yeah,
absolutely. So among other things, you are the first woman to be the conductor of the Carthage Choir, and its long history. I forget exactly how long a history that is.
1927.
So, yeah. Right. So it's about time, I think it's fair to say. What does that mean to you? I mean, and in a sense, do you feel some sort of extra responsibility, or does that get in the way of what you want to do and need to do as conductor of the Carthage Choir, to think maybe too much about that? Or is that a really important part, in a sense, of your identity as the conductor of the Carthage Choir?
It's a great question, and I should preface by saying that I grew up in the very much the British choral tradition of the sort of English cathedrals, you know, just the Queen's funeral the other day. That music was what I was raised on. Mm. And I remember being, you know, 8 and 9 years old and like having the realization that a lot of these choirs were boys' choirs, like men and boys' choirs, and I couldn't sing in them by nature of who I was. And I remember being furious because at that point I was a good little whippersnapper musician, and I was like, but I'm better than all the boys I know. I don't understand. I don't get this. And so ever since then, you know, it's been, you know, I definitely have had a pathway in front of me, and I've had a purpose in, you know, creating a more level playing field for all people in music, regardless of gender, identity, or expression. So it's really, I think it's very important. And I'm really glad that Carthage made a decision to broaden students' experiences in that sense. While there are more and more women who are getting graduate degrees in choral conducting, the number of women who are in this director of choral activities position is still a lot fewer than men. I wish I could, you know, pull out the exact stat about what that number is, but I can't at the moment. But it's pretty mind-boggling. There's lots of, you know, incredible people doing work of all genders in public schools, but in those, you know, kind of academia, upper ends of academia, there aren't that many. And so I am very, very excited and very grateful to be doing the work that I'm doing. And it's because I had, as I sometimes describe them, I have this pack of she-wolves that raised me. Between my mother and my music teachers and my colleagues in Kansas and in Minnesota, I had a lot of really strong women who believed in me and pushed me to, no, dream bigger. You can do this. You're supposed to do this. Hmm. So in terms of like how that plays at Carthage, I have a lot of incredible colleagues the fact that they've been, you know, open and willing to hear what I have to say already, and especially not only am I a woman, but I'm a young woman, which adds to this whole, equation of, you know, people thinking things about you before they know you. I've really been grateful to have people who are willing to listen and try things with me as well. So I'm really, really grateful.
I know that from what I've heard you say to the choir, that one thing that's really important to you is the repertoire you choose for the choir to sing, and that in addition to the music just being great music, it's important to you where that music comes from or from whom that music comes. Tell our listeners more about that.
Absolutely. You know, I think like a lot of people in the last few years taken it upon myself to do as much research and as much, you know, listening as I can to people whose, you know, skin color is different than mine, whose gender expression is different than mine, whose stories are different than mine, and becoming aware of the privilege that I've had and how to then leverage the power that I have to elevate others. And I think for me, the important thing is to put, you know, make it a bigger table, put, you know, bring more seats to the table. I love Bach. I'm not going to throw Bach out the door. But at the same time, you know, there are people who are writing incredible pieces that should be at the table with Bach. So for instance, our upcoming fall choral concert, which is on October the 9th, we are going to perform pieces by female composers, which again, I'm also a composer, and I kind of hate the like female composer phrase. Why can't I just be a composer? But I just have to, you know, say it to elevate these voices, including a piece by St. Olaf graduate Mari Valverde, who is a really strong advocate for the trans community. And it's a poetry of the piece is by a trans poet. And it's really exciting, and I can't wait to bring this piece to Carthage. We're doing, you know, music by Black composers from the spiritual tradition, and also from the what we would call the non-idiomatic tradition of Black music, which is more, again, in the sort of Western concert style. At Christmas Fest, you'll hear one of these pieces by Rosephanie Powell, who's a composer who has written extensively for both solo voice and choirs. We'll hear her "The Word Was God," which is a super exciting, very rhythmic, driving piece. And I'm just really excited, again, because Carthage has this amazing choral tradition where we've had, you know, composers from all over the world come through here, and we've taken the choir all over the world. So now, you know, what of the world can we bring to Carthage through this music? So I'm very excited about that.
When you stand in front of the Carthage Choir for a given rehearsal, typically what is the process that's going on beyond the obvious, which is they sing, you listen, you figure out what needs to be better and how to get there. But beyond that, what is the rehearsal process like for you? I mean, what is most important to have happen in a given rehearsal with the Carthage Choir and Dr. Maggie Burke?
Well, with any choir I stand in front of, there sort of has to be a moment of magic in every single rehearsal. There's got to be some sort of like moment where everyone is really carefully listening to each other and carefully understanding themselves in that moment too. And I always talk about this paradox where, you know, in any sort of music rehearsal, whether it's a band or a string orchestra or a choir, you live on this kind of razor's edge of being fully aware of who you are and what you bring to the ensemble, and also at the same time completely aware of what everyone else is doing. You know, how do you have that? And so for me, it's creating an environment where that is possible. So I'm very high energy in rehearsal, as my students will be able to tell you. There's never a dull moment. I definitely want people to feel like they can ask questions, and we have I really want it to be not quite a democratic process, but at the same time, definitely not the sort of I am the all powerful professor and you are the people out there. I want it to be more of an exchange. And then you mentioned listening. To me, listening is everything in rehearsal. I mean, like, between them listening to themselves, then me having the sense of to be as, you know, as razor's edge of feedback as I can give. How efficient can I be? How quickly can we make this change happen? How gracefully can we make that change happen? I guess I'd also say so that it sticks and so that it means something, and then students understand not only the what I'm asking them to do, but why I'm asking them to do it. Again, I'm not that kind of person who wants to, you know, have this veil of authority behind me. That wouldn't be authentic to who I am, and it wouldn't be, you know, sort of. And you teach who you are, so that's which is a thing that anyone who's taught for a while knows. I'm so grateful because they have absolutely risen to the challenge that I've set them so far, and I can't wait to see how far we go this year. Wow. So,
you are at least relatively inexperienced when it comes to conducting a choir at the collegiate level. I mean, versus the public school experience that you had, which was with younger singers. And of course, I'm sure as an undergrad and as a graduate student, you had some of that experience. But I just wonder, what about that particular newness has been interesting for you to have a choir in front of you of students at this level in their lives? How does that compare to a lot of the work that you've done before this?
I think, you know, I did have, you know, in my doctorate, I had several experiences of, you know, conducting, you know, college age students. And I think, you know, the difference perhaps here at Carthage is, I think the thing I love about it too is the variety of students that we have in Carthage Choir. You know, obviously we have some people who are music majors, but more often than not, they have maybe a music minor and they're majoring in something totally different: biology, psychology, nursing. And so in rehearsal, you know, I'm trying to, you know, make sure that I'm accommodating to both that high flyer music performance student who is ready for all the technical language and vocabulary and history and all that stuff, as well as the person who is a very talented, you know, non-music major who is there and maybe doesn't have the same vocabulary level or the same exact experience. And so I am always trying to find, you know, a balance of teaching tools, whether it's humor in a certain situation or whether it's more explanation than I might normally give about a composer or something like that, because I know there's an English major in the front row who might care more about who this poet was, you know. So just ways to connect with all the different students. That's been a really exciting and like why I got into academia, why I want to do this, you know, sort of a challenge. So I say challenge, but really more of an invitation. So.
Nicely put. In addition to leading the Carthage Choir, what else comprises your academic duties this fall semester?
So I direct one other ensemble, which I just announced last night, who the members were. This is the Lincoln Chamber Singers. They're a group of 12, and it's going to be a group that focuses a lot on, I would say, early music, so before the Romantic period, and then I would say new music as well. They'll make their debut at Christmas Festival this year, this time around, with pieces by Jakob Handel, who's a Renaissance composer from Germany, a piece by Cecilia McDowell, who is a British composer, and then a piece by me, which will be really fun. And then I also teach vocal music methods this semester, which is, you know, a class for juniors and seniors who are on the pre-licensure track, where we talk about, you know, everything from how to set up your rehearsal room most effectively to, you know, how to fix problems with intonation to how to, you know, run a budget. So hopefully it'll be a really practical class for them. Then this spring I'll teach choral literature, and then I'll also teach conducting at some point in the next kind of rotation cycle. So,
well, that sounds like enough.
Yeah.
Oh, and then I should probably also mention I'm the director of the Christmas Festival as well, along with my colleague Matthew Hoagland.
That's right.
So, you know, why not? Let's bring it on. Right. So,
Dr. Dene has handed off those reins, and happily
a huge
so.
Smile
I should
on my face. Yes.
Very good. And by the way, when do tickets go on sale for a Christmas festival? October 1st. All right. I know that's a date that's very important to a lot of people, and a lot of people are looking forward to that. Well, speaking of looking forward to things, we want people to once again make special note of the homecoming concert that is going to be happening on the campus of Carthage this Saturday evening at 7:30 p.m. in Siebert Chapel. The concert is going to be opening up with the Wind Orchestra under the direction of Dr. James Ripley. The Carthage Choir will be performing, of course, under Dr. Berger. The Carthage Treble Chorale, celebrating its 40th anniversary this year, will be performing under Dr. Peter Dene, and, of course, as a very special guest, along with alums coming for the concert to sing in the concert, will be Laura Kepler, former Miss America, who will be joining the Treble Chorale in two different pieces. And all of the choirs, present students and alums, joining together in a mighty finale with Martin Shaw's piece, With a Voice of Singing. This concert is free and open to the public again Saturday evening at 7:30 p.m. I also wanted to make quick mention of the fact that the podcast version of the morning show this weekend is celebrating Carthage's 175th anniversary and homecoming. Tomorrow, the podcast is a conversation I recorded back in 1997 with Dr. Alan Anderson, who was associated with Carthage for well over five decades in various capacities as a student and as an administrator and even temporary president for a time. And in that conversation, an excerpt from it, he talks about the dramatic move that Carthage made from Carthage, Illinois to Kenosha, Wisconsin in the early 1960s, and what was behind that wrenching but ultimately necessary move. It's an interesting conversation that you can hear tomorrow on the podcast. And Sunday, also from the archives, the podcast for Sunday will feature Dr. Bill Roth, who for many years was a member of the music faculty, for many years the campus organist. And this is an excerpt in which he talks about overseeing the design of and installation of the Cassavant pipe organ that still graces Siebert Chapel all of these years later. That was back in the mid-1970s. So that's a conversation about that is really fun to hear after all these years. So that's on the podcast version of The Morning Show. So look for The Morning Show with Greg Berg if you have not yet subscribed in order to hear those conversations. My thanks today to my three colleagues from the music faculty for joining us today, Dr. James Ripley, Dr. Peter Dene, and most especially for her first visit, Dr. Maggie Burke. Great to talk with all of you on the morning show today, and very best wishes to all of you.
Thanks
so much, Greg.
Thank you.
Monday on the morning show, you'll hear my conversation with Elsa Schunesson, the author of a very interesting book called Being Seen. She is someone who is profoundly blind and deaf both and has worked very hard to try to fight against what she sees as crippling ableism that is so much a part of American culture. And her book is a chronicle not only of her own experiences navigating the world with blindness and deafness, but also the work she has done as an activist. That's tomorrow, I should say Monday, on The Morning Show. The Morning Show airs every weekday morning between 8 and 9 o'clock. The program is archived on our website, wgtd.org. We want to remind you that Wisconsin Public Radio's fall membership drive is currently underway. You can express your appreciation for all you hear over Wisconsin Public Radio and WGTD by going to wpr.org or calling 1-888-202-2550.